Welcome to the Voices.Earth podcast series. Today we're speaking with Michael McGee, the creator of CO2.Earth, about his organization, his recent research, and much more. And in addition, CO2.Earth is a very important and very special site to us, being that it was the very first ever .Earth domain name launched back in 2015. And Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. And let's start at the top. So clearly you expressed an early interest in securing a .Earth domain, even before it was registered, even before it was officially launched. You know, what piqued your interest in being kind of the pioneer in the .Earth tribe, if you will?
Yeah, well, that was, 2012, 2013. And I had for quite a number of years been reposting the Earth's latest CO2 readings at a website that I created. It was co2now.org. And there were a lot of new top-level domains coming out that were being announced at the time. And when I saw the .Earth as one of the domains that was going to be coming, I just knew that was a domain I wanted to start using. And, the data that I repost, the CO2 data, has planetary significance, and I couldn't think of a domain that's better than CO2.Earth. And so somehow I got an email address for Jacob Williams over at Interlink. That's the .Earth registry in Japan. And I told him I wanted to move CO2now.org over to CO2.Earth and asked, you know, when I could try and register that domain. I thought it was a bit of a long shot. He got back pretty quick with, the target dates for opening up the registration. And, time went on, and I guess it was probably summer of 2015, and I got an invitation from Jacob at Interlink to set up the CO2.Earth website just before the registration opens to the public. And I was thrilled. I felt very honored, and I did that. I set up CO2.Earth.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you were a core part of what we call the founders program for the .Earth domain. And now that we've been, a couple years into it, as a pioneer, if you will, of the .Earth tribe, as we like to call it, has it all lived up to your expectations in terms of using a .Earth domain name?
Absolutely. And, went live, November 2015, November 13th. Actually the first one to go live was democracy.earth. That was, the same week as CO2.earth. And I think that was fitting. I also think it's fitting that CO2.earth was one of the first, carbon dioxide in our atmosphere has enabled life to evolve over billions of years, and for our highly intelligent species to emerge, relatively recently. And on the flip side, the CO2 levels that are they keep accelerating. That's been happening really since around the Industrial Revolution. Our climates are changing. Oceans are changing around the world. Things are warming up. There's all kinds of changes, and it's putting a lot of stress on democracies and other societies all around. And so the .Earth site that I run helps with the recognition and, helps people connect with these issues that really affect us all. And I just can't think of a better domain to working with than the .Earth at CO2.Earth.
Outstanding. That's a perfect segue, Michael, to talk about your actual site. So if possible, can you give us some insight on how the metrics on CO2.Earth work and how they're tracked? How do you get this data?
Well, I've been using AW Stats and Google Analytics for some time. Unfortunately, I don't really have the full picture of things since about 2016, 2017, because of some technical issues that I really just haven't had time to sort out. I do a lot of this work. I do this work mostly as an individual, on top of, full-time job and family and all the things that come with all of those things. And the last time I looked at Google Analytics, CO2.Earth was hitting 50,000 unique views a month. Yeah, and it's been growing. The trend is definitely continual growth, and I think that it's still growing, and I will eventually get to sorting out those technical issues. Excuse me. With the AW stats, the number of hits for I have graphic files that are served to I have graphic files that are served to some CO2 widgets that I host at another website called show.earth. And, you know, before I went to show.earth, those were hitting 3 million and 3 million hits in 2011. That doubled to 6 million in 2012. And I think that that has only grown ever since.
That's fantastic. And in terms of like the CO2 data, because I'm looking at like the daily CO2 here, looks like from December 19th. How do you get the actual data itself? It's, you know, the CO2 reporting here. How does that, what's the magic sauce on the back end for you here?
Yeah, well, the CO2, the atmospheric CO2 data that I repost comes from the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. There's two scientific institutions that have independent monitoring programs of the CO2 levels. The original was the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. It was a program started by David Keeling. And around 1974, I believe, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, both institutions are in the States, started its independent program. And that data is freely available to anyone. It's publicly accessible. And what I do is really access the data. It can be a bit hard to find if you're not sure what you're looking for or how to read the data charts. And CO2.earth brings it forward in a way that's easy to understand for you know, a layperson.
That's fantastic. And speaking of laypersons, my next, that's a perfect segue. We understand that you recently finished your thesis, and would love to get an overview on that in layman terms, if possible. I'm sure it probably gets pretty deep in terms of technical terminology.
Yeah, sure. You know, I finished my thesis just this summer, and I interviewed seven amazing, very seasoned Earth system scientists who are based in four different countries. These are quantitative researchers, and each one has their own mix of scientific disciplines. You know, I guess the short story is that I interviewed each of them, and I had two kind of guiding research questions for the project. You know, one was, what is it like to for senior Earth system scientists to learn about the Earth system and to communicate what they know and to live with the knowledge that they have? And then the second question was, how can, you know, our learning about, as non-experts, how can our learning about the scientists' learning experiences help us with our learning about the Earth system? And my study was a qualitative study, and I wrote a thesis that contains the names and Earth learning stories of some of the world's top experts in their fields, you know, biology, paleoclimatology, biogeochemistry, oceanography, and so on. And I wrote the thesis in a way that you don't need to be a scientist or even an educator to learn a lot about what the scientists know. It's these stories that they tell are relatable to all of us, and it brings that kind of higher level knowledge down to sort of into a context and a format that people understand and can learn through the stories. And so that's really what the thesis is about. And it's written in a way that anyone can read it. And it's actually a copy. You can get a copy, a PDF online. Just Google Learning for Planetary Habitability, and you'll be able to download it.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's great. We'll certainly offer a link to that here in the final blog post for this interview. That's excellent, and thanks for the rundown on there. And you know, we also understand that you're working on other projects that possibly could fall under another .earth domain name. Is there anything you're willing to share with us at this time?
Yeah, sure. You know, actually, one of the things I'm just finalizing is I'm setting up a very simple website, habitability.earth, and that site is going to feature the thesis. So I really want, I think it's there's some important stories there. I want to share that, and it's a way of making it easy for people to find something that, you know, academics can find through, you know, different university institutions. This brings it more into the public domain and makes it easier to access. So, you know, going forward in 2018, my goal is to invite people in to work on projects that are aimed at stopping the rise of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And to do that, I want to move away from, you know, what I do is kind of a single citizen initiative. I've got some great support from my spouse, Tracy, and a friend of mine, Bill, who does the heavy lifting at the CO2 Earth Facebook page. But I want to really invite people to join in and take up a project or take up a piece of the work that's already being done, or create a new work, a new initiative that's compatible with the work that I'm doing. And you know, the problems that we're facing at the planetary level it's going to take a community to a bigger community than we already have, you know, working together. And I want to promote that and to bring some attention to this kind of a mission. I'm just about to launch a very basic site, prooxygen.earth, and that's a way of bringing attention to the larger mission. And I'm also launching giver.earth as a way of encouraging, you know, a lot of people to put more energy into solving these issues. And that's really going to be a kind of an invitation to get involved and do what you can to solve some of these issues that are at a, you know, they're at a planetary scale. And we need to do a lot more work to connect for us as individuals in particular parts of the world to make the links between our lives and our places with what's happening at the planetary scale. So that's basically the direction things are going, and CO2.earth is here, and it's here to stay as long as I can keep it running. And I'm really excited to be doing this work.
That's fantastic, Michael. This is really appreciate you sharing your future vision there. And certainly everything you're doing is, we believe, incredibly inspirational. And especially taking this community approach, if you will, which is, it sounds like it's critical for where we need to go in terms of really saving planet Earth, if you will. You know, Michael, is there anything we may have missed today before we sign off? Anything else you'd like to add? This has been a wonderful podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. It really has been. I just want to maybe to kind of anchor things. If you go to the CO2.Earth website, what you'll see is the latest reading for November 2017, and it's 405.14 parts per million. When I started this work, it was actually 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, and I posted the data, the reading for CO2 levels in November 2007. The reading was 382.35 parts per million. That's more than 2.2 parts per million per year. And that might start to sound like it's getting a bit technical, but it's really important information because if you look at the decade before that, the increase in CO2 levels was just less than 2 parts per million. You know, it's the rate of increase now has never been higher, or it's never been this high. And, you know, these are really important. It's really important data that brings our attention to what's happening at the planetary scale. It helps remind us that we've got to have that level of thinking in our minds, and we need to be learning at that level so that we can connect things back to our own lives.
Yeah. What a perfect way to end the interview here, especially giving that context behind where we actually stand when it comes to this issue. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive Voices.Earth podcast interview with Michael McGee, the creator of CO2.Earth. And Michael was kind enough to share his insights about his organization, his recent research, his future plans, which involve several new .Earth domains. And as we mentioned, Michael was one of the founders, if you will. He was in the founders program of the .Earth domain and was an early pioneer of the .Earth tribe. And Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Matt. This has been great.